This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
I'm Chase Rolson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
Really, really not that good.
Welcome to another installment of the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. Kyle, we're glad to have you.
Installing shit now,
good to have you here. Hopefully your season's doing well. Don't get too frustrated. You've still got an unfilled tag. Plenty of time. We're going to cover some late season stuff. Maybe not this episode, but here on the next few for sure. We probably will this episode. It would apply here. The going gets a little rough late season for some people. Depends on your property and situation and a lot of things we can't control. But just keep your head in the game. You got this.
Keep on keeping on.
First of all, thank you for being here. We got new merch on the store.
We do.
If you want to support us, we also have a Patreon if you want to support us there too. It's all linked in the description of the podcast. What else? Chandler's traditional archery butt kill is live on our YouTube. If you subscribe to our YouTube, we have a giveaway thing going on. Subscribe and just show us you subscribed in one of our posts. We're picking a winner for an HHA Tetra, a Scent Crusher gear bag, and a Working Class Bow Hunter swag pack.
Or just subscribe. It's easy peasy.
There's our quick announcements. The podcast always presented by HHA Sports. Code WCB15 to save yourself some money there. Also Scent Crusher, absolutely love our Scent Crusher stuff. That's like my thing. I say absolutely love our Scent Crusher because we like the gear bags and the roller bags. The gear bag and the roller bag have kind of moved into our number one and two item that we're using. Convenience, and you can just take everything with you. Warning, Scent Crusher, ozone, anything, watch your elastics and rubber and stuff like that in it. That's should be kind of a known thing at this point with all the ozone companies. It's not a Scent Crusher thing. It's an ozone thing.
Yep.
So just keep that in mind. Just what I do, if I have an elastic waistband, I'll pull it out of the zipper and zip it up to it, and then just don't run the cycle on the waistband.
And it takes a while. I mean, it's not like one cycle is going to ruin your elastics. You know, I've had the same pair of my base layers that have been running through there since we started with Scent Crusher, and they're just finally starting to go.
So. Over how many years? 3-4 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't kill it either. Like, I don't run
14 cycles a day or something like that when I'm hunting. I don't feel like you need to do it that much. You know, if you're out hanging a stand and it's 80 degrees and you're sweating crazy, you know, maybe then you need to do a quick cycle. But you don't need to run a 30-minute cycle every time you get back to your truck or anything like that. Like, you can get away with just run cycles as needed, be efficient with it. You don't need to overdo it. It's effective stuff. Scentcrusher.com, super thankful for that partnership. Been a partner for a long time. Loophold Optics, we're all rocking. Loophold Rangefinders, of course, one of the number one tools for bow hunters besides our bow, I think, nowadays.
Yep.
All of us are rocking 10x42s for binos. Check out Loophold Optics. Gator Outdoors, GatorOutdoors.com, code WCB10. They are a lifestyle and apparel company pretty much now. Great stuff. Local to us here in the Midwest, out of Bellevue, Iowa. Good people, great customer service. Right now, you can still get like your Scent Crusher stuff. So that code WCB10 works for all that. HHA, they're a dealer for like all the top brands. So check out Gator Outdoors. Also, Big Time. The time of this recording, we're going to hang out with the Big Time boys, Eric. Me and Eric are.
Going up this weekend.
Yep. We're going to do some hunting in Indiana, some late season hunting. We're going to focus on the Big Time food plot areas where we're going. But yeah, we have a code WCB2020. Save you some money on everything at Big Time. It's pretty cool. And Old Barn Taxidermy. Golly, they've been busy. They're doing deer processing now. They're a tannery. They have all sorts of things. They're some of the best in the business. Bears. What's that?
They're going to be so busy.
Yeah, they got good people working for them, though. You know, they're efficient.
It's an impressive operation.
It really is, man. It is.
It's kind of cool to go through that whole, all the buildings and stuff and see how everything works.
That is cool, too. Yeah, and they'll show you, man. If you go there and you take a, if you take a deer head there, by the way, and say you're a working class listener, they'll enter you in the working class pot to win a deer head for next year. So,
boom.
How confident are you? Go in cocky. Bring your deer head there. Yeah, be like, go in cocky. Put me in that drawing because I'm going to win one for my mom. I killed
them. Might as well just give it to me now.
Yeah, just want to pick my name and I'll just bring that 160 in like October 15th. So we'll see you then. Yeah. Old Barn Taxidermy.
This guy's good.
Yeah. It's like, damn, real good. You got a veteran shout out?
I do. This was submitted by Angela Brewer. And the veteran is Robert Brewer. He was in the Air Force. And it says short and sweet. So it just says, Robert's been a fan since day one. And it says, thank you. So thank you for your service, Robert.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks for listening since day one. I mean, can't beat that.
I don't know why he's still listening, but he's still here with us.
I'll crack a beer for you, buddy.
Cheers, buddy.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. That's awesome. Veteran shout-outs are workingclassbowhunter.com at our contact tab, and you can submit a veteran shout-out there. Cool, boys. Well, what's new? Everybody doing good?
Yeah. Yeah, doing good.
We have myself in the studio, Kurt Geyer.
Yep, Eric Hammond here.
Doug Schmidt.
Austin Chandler.
A.K.A. The Lord. I'll do it for you.
The Lord.
It's weird if you do it, but it's fitting.
I just expect you to follow it up.
Yeah, Doug and I are in a little break right now because it's shotgun season in Iowa, so we're kind of...
Right.
On a break from bow season.
Right.
Which sucks, but it's kind of nice at the same time, hunting hard, and now you kind of kind of relax a little bit, you know.
Yeah, how many days is the gun season over there in Iowa?
First season just ended, and then shotgun will be 2 weekends.
I think it opens back up like the 19th or something.
Yeah, 18th. And then
you can't bow hunt at all during that time frame?
No.
Why? Well, I don't get it. Why?
I don't know.
That's just how it is.
It is what it is, you know. I don't know. But
Whatever, man.
Was it 21st? Late muzzleloader starts?
21st is when
that's when you can start bow hunting again.
You can bow hunt during that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you guys have till the 21st.
Yep. Yeah.
Dang. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Like a 2-week break.
I always got it figured out. I don't know. Just cancel it. Cancel gun season altogether. You don't need those. I'm just kidding.
I mean,
it would help a lot because some of the pictures I've seen are just tiny little bucks stacked up in pickup trucks and
just piles.
It is what it is.
You can group hunt technically in Iowa, can't you?
Yeah,
party hunt they call
party
it.
Party hunt.
Yeah,
is that legal in like Wisconsin? I don't know for sure.
Can you do it in Illinois?
No,
oh, you can't.
So your tag's just your tag, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Unless you're fucking shady, but that's so. Like if we all hunted together and we were doing a party hunt. And we did like a deer drive, and I shot a deer. I could use your tag.
You'd have to
if you already shot a deer, and say we're party hunting. You could still go with us and shoot another one, and I could put my tag. I'd have to put my tag.
Even a buck.
Yep.
So I could kill how many deer could I do that with? Say I went out with 30 people and I filled my tag already with my.
If you have 30 people and you have one tag left, 30 people can go out.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
some holes in that game.
It's weird. I mean,
you're going to tell me that goes smoothly every year and there's no foul play with any of it? You know what I mean?
Oh, there's got
to
be.
That'd be hard to track.
Damn.
It's weird for sure.
I don't like that.
I never really liked the party hunting part of it.
That surprises me from Iowa. That I can see like Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan doing some shit like that.
Eric and I were just talking about the doe problem that he's got too. I mean, you said the ratio is not even close to 1-to-1.
No.
And they're limiting the number of doe tags in his county big time. What'd you say, like 200 tags?
There's right at 200 tags for Scott County.
For the entire county.
Entire county, and that's for every season. So that's archery, both shotguns, and light muzzleloader.
Why? Do you have any idea?
I don't know why they do that or how they come up with that number, but Scott County has always been right around that 200 mark. And I know Muscatine County used to be pretty high, and they dropped it a few years ago. Yeah.
We need to get some sort of official that knows about that or a biologist.
Yeah, we need to talk to a biologist.
Anybody that knows anybody from Iowa, game warden, the biologist.
Because there's actually, like, you know, the rule book you can get every year from the DNR. There's a map in there that shows every county and how many doe tags are in each county. And some of them southern states are, like, you know, 3,000 doe tags, 2,000. Yeah. They're those higher numbers, but up where we're at, it's super low.
So, Austin, I don't know if you know, how many does can we shoot in Illinois?
As many as you have a tag for.
That's what I thought. Like, we can just keep going and buying them?
Yeah, you can go out and buy an over-the-counter doe tag and keep whacking them.
That's weird.
I hope I'm correct on that.
Well, I've never...
That's what I've always done.
Well, I mean, if you can keep buying them.
Yeah, I've never been limited on the number of does I've shot. I've shot 7 or 8 does in one season before. Yeah.
Now, when you buy one doe tag, are the next ones after that cheaper?
No.
Or are they all the same price?
No, they're all like $15, but I think you can go and buy 4 or 5 at a time if you want to.
I think you can.
I might be able to buy 20. I've never tried it.
When I buy my tags, I buy all the tags I think I'm going to use for the year initially. Like, so what I mean is, like, I buy their combinations, an either sex and an antlerless.
Right. Yeah.
So I buy 2 of those because I can shoot 2 bucks.
Yeah, if you happen to have 2 bucks come by in the same sit, you're legal to shoot both bucks.
I buy all the tags that I expect to use right then because I don't want to shoot a 160 and then have another huge buck come in and be able to shoot him in the same spot and then be like, oh, I got to go buy a tag.
Yep.
You know, that sucks.
See, in Iowa, you just have to watch that other one go.
Yeah, which... Most one.
We only
buck.
Get 1 buck tag.
Yeah. But you can kill one with a bow and one with a gun.
Yeah. Right. Which is weird, too, because I was telling Chandler, too, like, our tags go on sale, what is it, August 15th?
Something like that.
August or September 15th, whatever, one of the two. And this year, I set my alarm for midnight, and I woke up, got on the DNR app.
Yeah.
And I had to buy a doe tag at midnight, or else they're sold out by 8 o'clock in the morning.
That's freaking crazy. Shouldn't be that hard to shoot a doe if you want to go out and shoot a doe. I mean, I could see if there's like an issue with the ratio getting close to 1-to-1. They're wanting to kind of limit the number of does. But if you're seeing 7 or 8 does to a buck, like why not give the guy an opportunity to, you know, shoot pick some of those does out? It's helping the farmer. It's helping insurance companies. I mean, it's helping everybody.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either how they come up with it. It'd be nice to figure that out to see the reasoning.
Well, maybe, you know, us talking about it, one of our listeners has to know, or maybe we can reach out and try and find somebody that would know a little more.
Well, you can contact the DNR and they can come out and check and give you depredation tags where you can shoot. I forgot how many we got one year, but you could shoot like almost as many does as you wanted.
Oh, because
of all the damage they're doing and stuff.
Crop.
A farmer can
we had it 1 year.
I'm trying to remember the name of what Illinois calls it, but you can get it in Illinois too. Yeah, it's like a nuisance permit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was a guy. So when I was young, we're going to get on to the podcast here, but when I was younger hunting, I hunted in Fulton County, and this was a rumor, and we don't know any of it to be factual. The neighbor to the property we hunted got a nuisance permit is what the rumor was, and I heard you could shoot him with anything, with does or anything, with whatever you want at any time. If you have a nuisance permit. Now, I don't know if that's true. I wasn't a part of it, but that was like the conversation I remember the guys
having.
So
like you could shoot it with a rifle or whatever you want in the middle of the night if you wanted to, kind of like coyotes.
Like if you had 50 does out there tearing up your beans, like that farmer could go out and shoot them. Now, I don't know if that's true. It might have just been like during daylight hunting hours you could shoot them, but it was like almost like it was a coyote. It's like there were nuisance, like you could go out and shoot them. I don't know. I have to look into that and see. I never heard any like shots at night or anything that made me believe that, but I was young. You know, I was probably 13, 14 when
those guys
were talking about that. So, I don't know. Interesting. What the, anybody that knows like an Illinois conservation officer, an Iowa conservation officer that would want to do a podcast, or a biologist would be really cool.
Or a retired one or something. I mean, we'd have anyone in.
Anybody that's in the loop into current events would be cool. Yes. I've always wanted to
that's
do that.
Up to date.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to, I mean, they're busy.
Yeah.
And they're limited. There's not that many around in our area, in Illinois anyway. There's not that many around.
Not in Iowa either.
Probably because we're broke. Illinois. Yeah.
I know they hire like help during hunting season and like boating season when shit's busy and stuff, but.
Huh. Interesting stuff. Well, cool. I mean, maybe we'll have a follow-up podcast on that. It's interesting topics for sure. It'd be good to do that. So any listeners that can help us out, that'd be greatly appreciated. So let's get on with our guest here and get into the podcast. This is going to be a lot for you Eastern hunters. We're kind of hitting some of your guys' home ranges here with our guests. So hopefully you guys enjoy. Thank you for all the feedback on the buck episodes. We asked, you know, if you like the buck episodes, if you want us to change it up. We're going to get some people outside of our initial circle start to do some different interviews and stuff like that here in the future. So feel free to reach out if you think you're worthy to be on the Working Class Bow Hunter.
If you can handle it.
We're not worthy.
Yeah, if you can handle it. You know, we're months out on all this stuff, so that's what it takes. You got to start planning now. So, anywho, hope you enjoy the podcast. Thanks for listening. All right, we are on with our guest, and somehow females tend to keep coming on our show. I don't know why they give us a chance. Rachel Bushak. She said Bush AK, so that's how we say her last name.
Like Bush Light the Beer, so we figured that out a long time
ago. Right, I've read that can easy. A lot. Rachel, what's up? Thanks for joining the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So tell people who you are and where you're from. That way people can, you know, get familiar with the space.
Yeah, I'm from northwestern Pennsylvania, so if you think about the shape of Pennsylvania, it's just that corner way up by Lake Erie, almost in Ohio, almost in New York. I've hunted my whole life, born and raised here. Just eat, sleep, breathe, everything hunting. So I've been a long time listener. I'm glad to finally be talking to you guys.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. You are on Team Working Class officially now. Mm-hmm. So thank you for being a part of that and all the support along the years.
One of us.
You're part of the cult. So that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why you want me, but, you know, I'm not a big buck killer. I've hunted Pennsylvania most of I really just started hunting out of state the last couple of years. So, you know, all the bucks I've killed are Pennsylvania, which, you know, if you know anything about Pennsylvania, it's hard to kill a good buck here. But happy to be part of the team.
Well, I want to talk about Pennsylvania here because we have a lot of listeners out there, and we'll get into that in a second. But first, we want to know a little bit more about you. I mean, how did you get into hunting? Was this something, and don't punch me through the phone, but I'm playing what guys are going to think when they hear you talking is that your husband or boyfriend or whatever got you into it. You know what I mean? Like there's that, like mentality. That thought process or mentality in the hunting community with different personalities and shows and blah, 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 goes on and on, you know?
Yeah, no, I've hunted since I was a little kid. My dad got me into it, really. My dad's a bow hunter. I didn't bow hunt as a kid. I didn't bow hunt until I was an adult. But my dad got me into hunting as a kid, hunting, fishing, camping. Like, that's all we did growing up. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I gun hunted at that time you had to be 12 to gun hunt in Pennsylvania. So I gun hunted from age 12 on. I didn't bow hunt till I was an adult, really, because I don't know why. I don't know that I ever even thought about it because I don't know if it's because I'm small. Like, I'm only 5 foot. I don't even think I'm 5 foot tall with boots on. I don't know. I haven't measured myself lately. Not that that's an excuse. Like, I never let my height be an excuse. Like, I always work harder because of it. But, I don't know. I just never thought about bow hunting growing up, even though my dad did it. I guess I just didn't see other women doing it. You know what I mean? Like, we grew up in the country, like, we didn't even have cable TV growing up. So it's not like I watched women hunting on TV.
Wasn't really there, like, from a young age. Like, ignore internet influence. The influence in general just wasn't there, it sounds like. But
right. I mean, I was already weird enough being, like, the tomboy at school that, like, skipped school to go hunting. So I didn't get into bow hunting, and I'm kind of glad I didn't because I don't think I'd have the job I do today. Like, I know if I bow hunted when I was younger, just knowing how, like, dedicated I am to it, I wouldn't have done as good at school and stuff. So luckily, as nerdy as it sounds, like, I studied hard, I got a good job, and which, you know, led to me being able to now have a lot of time to hunt. Like, I work from home. I have a pretty flexible schedule. As long as I get my shit done at work, I can hunt when I want to hunt. So I probably spend as much time in the woods now as, you know, in 1 year as most people get to in 5 years. So I'm really fortunate. It's just because of the job I have.
That's very cool. How old were you when you started bow hunting?
Late 20. I'm 34 now. So, I mean, I really haven't been bow hunting that long. And really why I picked it up, well, I mean, a couple of things, but my job brought me to the city, and I was living like in the suburbs and commuting to the city and getting all dressed up and, you know, every day and realizing like I'm living a life that's just like, it's not me. It feels like someone else's life. And I, at the time, I'm like, I just have to sacrifice what I want to do in my personal life for what I want to do in my job, because, you know, my parents just, I always saw how hard they worked, and they were always like, you know, you gotta get a good job. And so I sacrificed a lot to have a good job, but then I just wasn't happy. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm living in the city, and I'm like, I have nobody I can relate to. And I'm like, how can I have like the job I want, but also the life I want? And, you know, I talked to my boss at work, and he let me work from home. He's like, you can live wherever you want to live as long as, you know, you get your job done and you, you know, travel for client meetings when you got to meet with clients. So I ended up moving back to my hometown and bought a house near my family and the property I grew up hunting and stuff. And then I had all this free time where, you know, I could pick up a bow. And I don't do anything like half-assed, you know, like if I'm going to do it, I dive deep into it. And so mm-hmm. immediately, like, I started, and I'm like a math numbers person. Like, that's what I do for a job is really math. I do predictive modeling. Mm-hmm. I'm an actuary, which like no one's ever heard of, but it's all like risk analysis and predictive modeling and using like historical data to predict future events. And I do it in healthcare costs, predicting future healthcare costs for my clients. But it really relates to bow hunting, right? Like, you know, you're using all this historical data to try to figure out what a deer is going to do.
Yeah, that's true. I was kind of like, how's that relate to bow hunting? And then you're like, see, boom, I'm smarter than you. And I'm like, wow, all right.
My wage brain couldn't think that fast.
My wage brain's like trying, it sounds like dial up over here, just trying to keep up with you just saying simple things.
She's good at using scenarios to predict what's going to happen in the future. So I can see where that would come in handy.
Very cool. Very interesting
strategy.
Oh my gosh. You should see my files. I mean, my husband thinks I'm such a nerd because it's like our computer, nothing but organized files of deer pictures, like by year, by location. And then I've got an Excel file that says like, you know, wind speed, pressure, moon phase, all these
wow.
all these different things. So yeah, so like when the Drury's rolled out DeerCast, I'm like, oh my god, I have to know that algorithm. So like, Mark, if you're listening, I need to know that. Like, I literally, that's what I do in my head all the time.
Well, I'm sure we could get you connected. That yeah, that's a good idea.
No, you could do that for a living, just organizing people's shit and keeping track of deer and stuff.
Yeah, just file people's trail cam photos for them and help them figure some shit out.
That's right.
There's a business there.
I would love that. But yeah, I mean, that's, so I got into, with work, I got to a place where they let me work from home. You know, I traveled, like pre-COVID, I traveled all the time to meet with clients. But luckily lately, I haven't had to travel at all, which is nice. So, you know, I work from home and I can hunt when I want. And I, you know, I picked up a bow and I just instantly fell in love, and it's just become my life, like year round, 365 days a year, bird and something bow hunting. It actually, that's how I met my, well, I don't want to say that's how I met my husband, because I probably knew him since I was like 3 or 4, but we just never actually connected until I started bow hunting, and he messaged me like, hey, you want to shoot bows sometime? And now we're married, so
that's where it all began.
I remember you sharing a picture of the two of you when you were extremely young in deer camp together. And did his dad know your dad? Or they shared hunting camp together or something like that?
Yeah. So his dad, we live in a real small, like one stoplight town. His dad owned a little sporting goods store in town, and he worked there all growing up. You know, working on bows and stuff. So my dad was always a bow hunter. So they just kind of knew each other from the sporting goods store in town. And every year, the day before gun season, in Pennsylvania, my grandpa had a big poker party, invited all the friends, family, neighbors, and, you know, get in a buck pool and stuff. And so we were the only two kids at that poker party. I have a picture of it where I'm probably, I don't know, 8 years old. He's a couple years older than me. He's probably 11. And we're sitting there playing poker. And just the night before deer season. And it's funny because now we're married. So
that's awesome. Cool.
That is cool.
That's very cool. What, it's kind of cool to hear all this background and kind of every, you know, you're come up into the hunting, I guess. It's super interesting. And it just goes to show, I mean, that hunting culture is still in the Midwest, but it shows it's a, maybe, I would say it's arguably a little deeper out east. When it comes to like the, I mean, it's also my perspective, right, of like what I did, like the gathering type, everybody together
like
party.
I think like Wisconsin, PA, like out
that's
east.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, Michigan and PA, shit like that.
That runs deep. People have done that. I mean, that's their livelihood.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Well, for sure, gun season. I mean, like lately, the last 2 years, Pennsylvania made a change where gun season always started the Monday after Thanksgiving. And they changed that 2 years, or last year, 2019 was first year, I think, where it started the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So you had Saturday. And actually, this year, they let us hunt Sunday, which was like a huge change. And people went crazy about it. They're like upset. And it's like, well, you get more time to hunt.
Yeah.
Why are you upset?
Wait, but upset about because, getting Sunday to hunt?
Yeah, because they're, well, from moving it from Monday to Saturday in the first place, because they're, what they like doing, and I feel bad saying they, because like I'm one of them, but is Friday after work, you know, driving to their deer camp or whatever, spending Saturday, Sunday getting shit ready, getting their gun, sighting in guns, getting stands ready, and then Monday is the opener. And they liked that tradition. And
I thought you were going to say getting shit faced.
That's what I was thinking.
No, well, that too. But I mean, it's just funny that people got so upset about it. And it's like, literally, they're giving you more time to hunt. If you don't want to hunt those days, don't hunt those days.
Yeah,
but
you can still drive to camp and get ready and go hunt on Monday if you want to.
I think that, but it ruins that opening day feeling probably,
oh,
right?
I'm sure it does.
I'm sure. But, I mean, now as a bow hunter, I mean, growing up, I would have loved it. But now as a bow hunter, it just makes me cringe because it's like, okay, more time for the gun hunters to kill everything.
Well, let's talk about, since we're on the topic and we have a lot to talk about, let's talk about hunting Pennsylvania, because we're kind of already at that, like, I guess, the grassroots start of it, like, kind of. Like growing up in there, it just sounds like the culture is a lot super involved. The not hunting on Sunday was always interesting to me because that's not a thing we even think about here in the Midwest.
I probably wouldn't even know about it if we didn't do the podcast, to be honest with you.
Me either, except unless I saw like a Facebook post or something random that. I mean, give us an overview, because I hear good and bad from Pennsylvania. I think the more we do the podcast, we hear how hardcore Pennsylvania hunters are. They're passionate. It's their lives. They live it. That's, I would say, 90% of encounters I have on the internet or listener interaction. That's what I feel. Pennsylvanians are hardcore. Awesome listeners, big supporters, which is why we have a working class Pennsylvania hat.
That we sell the most of out of every state combined, I think.
It is the number one selling. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Thanks, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania's so awesome.
There's that side of it, and then there's the side of Pennsylvania. And I'm not saying this. This is what the feedback I've seen. For the record, I don't want to upset our Pennsylvania crowd. We'll start burning shit. Pennsylvania sucks. It's hard to hunt. Hey, we get a lot of offers to hunt Pennsylvania, which maybe one day we'll go out east and hunt. But right now I'm trying to like knock off like the other species bucket list before I go.
I'm trying to go the other way.
Go somewhere else. I'm going the other way right now. Rachel, I know you can relate to that. But
lots of pressure, I think.
Yeah, lots of pressure. Big hardwoods. Deer aren't as big usually in certain spots. I mean, what's your experience? And can you kind of break down all those?
Because isn't it kind of divided? Like part of the state is big hardwoods, and some of the other part is like ag, and like that's where you get in the cornfields and stuff.
Yep. So I'm in the western part of the state where there is a lot of ag. But I mean, I have hunted Illinois once, and having been to the Midwest, at least I'll say even our ag fields are so tiny compared to the Midwest. But yeah, this like central part of the state, or like the more mountainous areas, it's just big woods. But where I hunt, it's kind of a mixture. There's some ag fields, there's a lot of timber. But it is. It's smaller properties. There's a lot of pressure. There's so many hunters. Last I knew, Pennsylvania had the highest hunter density by far in the U.S. And it's just – and it's not only that, but I don't know. I feel like maybe you're talking to me at a bad point because we're in the middle of gun season.
So you're feeling feisty is what you're saying.
I'm getting pissed off because –
Better be pissed
off. There's just – I know there's just deer drives every day, and it's like deer you've hunted and tried to pattern and watch all year. It's just getting killed by anyone who goes out and buys a tag and just walks through the woods. And I mean, nothing against that, because honestly, that's how I was raised. That's how I started out. But I've, you know, once you get into bow hunting, you're like, you just look at things a lot differently.
Yeah.
And especially because I feel like a lot of people around here, I get the comments a lot that archery hunting is unethical because the deer don't die as fast. There's a lot of deer wounded. And it's like, really, half you gun hunters, and I say you, and I don't want to say that because I still gun hunt. I have nothing against gun hunting. I killed a buck with a gun this year, actually. But a lot of gun hunters, like, they shoot running deer because they're doing deer drives. They don't follow up on their shots.
They probably hit a lot of deer that they think they missed.
Yeah, exactly. And I go out shed hunting in the spring and I find all sorts of dead deer, and it's their gunshot wound, you know, and it's mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's a little frustrating. I don't want to go like off the deep end on negativity.
Let's dive in. Just dive in.
Do it.
It's a really hard state to hunt, but I like that because I think it's made me a better hunter, right? Like I've learned I hunt to avoid people as much as I hunt to find deer,
Chandler just brought this up, and we just talked about this a few podcasts ago and off the podcast. That's a big, big tactic and something a lot of people I don't think consider, especially in pressured areas.
I mean, there's a lot. Okay, so the other thing is trespassing isn't very well enforced, and I know that they're doing a lot to try to help with that. I don't know, the stupid purple paint. Well, you can't even see the purple paint. I don't know why they picked purple.
We have that too.
But trespassing, it just, people don't care. They're like, hey, I hunted this property for 40 years. And I'm like, yeah, well, I own it now and I hunt it, you know? And right. I get shit stolen every single year. I don't know. It's just frustrating. But I love it at the same time. I mean, but lately, like, I've hunted a lot by permission, where, you know, maybe a 40-acre piece and six people have permission or something like that. And it's tough because I might have a giant buck on camera there, but there's so many other people hunting it that it's like, I would rather hunt my own land in peace and quiet, even though I know I don't really have a good buck on camera, you know, just because mm-hmm. hunting shouldn't be that stressful. Like,
right, yeah.
I mean, if the deer stress you out, that's one thing, but I just, to have so many other hunters stealing your shit, or I went to get in my stand, it wasn't there. I was in my stand and I looked down and there's some other hunter trying to climb in it, and I'm like, hello, I'm here.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I would lose my mind. I'd be in prison. Mm-hmm. I'd be killing people.
I mean, oh gosh, I'm going to go there because, I mean,
dive.
Whatever.
Dive.
Whatever. When I was 14, I almost quit hunting because I was part of a deer drive and I watched a guy get his hat shot off his head.
No shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And they fucking laughed about it, you know? And I'm like, I hit the ground because I heard bullets flying, and I was shaking. I was crying. My dad's like, I said, I'm never hunting again. My dad said, no, we're only going to hunt with people we know and trust and things like that. So, I mean, it's sad, but there's just a lot of that shit that goes on out there.
Well, with that too, though, it's, and I know situations like that probably happen. I was going to say they probably don't happen as often as you think, but they probably happen more often than actually get talked about.
Yeah, you don't hear about it.
You know, between like a story like that, people on deer drives, and that's going to lead us into a segment here. And I was waiting. This is probably a perfect time. But like from my crossbow incident this year about getting shot, literally, mm-hmm. you know, on private ground by a neighbor hunting the line. Like it's, you just, there's the hardcore community that loves and cares about hunting and the ethics and all that. And I think that's all of us here, and I think it's 99.9% of our listeners, and it's the people that just go out willy-nilly, it's not a big deal, whatever, and they lack ethics. They don't know to have a certain level of ethics when you're hunting live animals that kind of just make you, I don't know, they make you just want to freak out.
Yeah.
And I don't know who to freak out on because it just makes you, like, it's ridiculous. Like, that shouldn't be something that happens, you know? It's,
right.
I mean, I'm sure people get killed every year during drives and just random hunting accidents or hunting accidents.
I remember growing up, I mean, I grew up just like Rachel did, gun hunting. I didn't get into bow hunting until later, but I remember, you know, if you were sitting, you were standing, always make sure you're standing behind a tree.
Yeah.
And you'd hear slugs whiz by you. You know, it's scary when you hear them.
Yeah, it's not a good sound.
No, it's never creepy had that as happen. Fuck. Oh, it's scary.
Never had it happen. Well, that, so PA, man, PA is, it's sounding, so I see big bucks come out of PA, and then I see like what I expect to come out of PA on the internet.
Well, that's where I did want to say, like, PA put in an antler restriction, I don't know, 20, maybe close to 20 years ago. I've been hunting 22 years. And when I first started hunting, there was no antler restriction. And we shot, if it's brown, it's down. You know, we're filling the freezer. And now, so it varies by unit. So it's almost like a Western state where we have different units. I'm in Unit 1B. That's not giving away a lot because that's all of Northwestern Pennsylvania. so I'm not going to get more detailed than that. Like, not that I'm a big buck killer, but I think people around here, I've done really well for myself in Pennsylvania. But in 1B, you basically have to have three up. It's called a three up rule. So it's either an 8-point with brows or a 6-point with no brows. I mean, or I guess a half rack, but as long as it has three off coming off the main beam on one side. So, you know, for the most part, you're talking probably a 2-year-old. I mean, it's sad though, because even like a 3-year-old is a good target for Pennsylvania. Like, we consider a 3-year-old a mature buck. Like, I know in the Midwest you don't, but they don't really get older than that here very often.
Right.
And so a 3-year-old here, like a 3-year-old 100-inch buck, that's not a bad buck, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a hard goal to say, I want to kill a 3-year-old Pope and Young every year. I mean, it just doesn't, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And we're getting there though. I've seen, that's the thing. I've seen the improvements over the past 20 years.
That was my next question is like, are these antler restrictions really doing a lot? Cause I'll be honest, for Illinois, that would not do anything for us. I don't think.
Oh, absolutely. No. I think it does. I mean, I never saw, like, back when I first started hunting, a 100-inch buck was a huge buck. And I'm not saying that because I was a kid, but you just didn't see them getting killed very often. And, I mean, I don't know, because, like, hunter numbers declined, too, so that could be part of it. It's just we're killing less deer. But now, I mean, people are, you see them more frequently. It's not that they weren't there before, because, yes, like, there were giant bucks killed back then in Pennsylvania, but not very often. And now it does happen pretty often. My dad, and it's funny, it's like my dad, who, you know, loves hunting, taught me pretty much everything I know about hunting. You know, he laughs at me, like, I'll come out of the stand and I call him every night, like, what did you see? What did you see? And I'll send him pictures or videos of bucks that I pass, and he just loses his shit. Like, I can't believe you passed that buck. I'm like, Dad, it's like a 100-inch buck. But he's still used to that. That's a really good buck, Pennsylvania.
Kind of stuck in his ways a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
So you would say with confidence that from your experience, the antler restrictions are working.
Absolutely.
I'm curious to see, Illinois is a 2-buck state. With archery. Chandler, do you think with an antler restriction like that, do you think it'd do any good for us?
I mean, there's not an easy way to do it. If we had like a, say, an 8-point, like 4 points on each side restriction, I mean, there's so many 1-year-old deer that have, that's a 4x4, 8-point buck. Like, there's no way that a point restriction could help us. Now, there's no way to enforce like an age structure, which is what we would need. So I don't think it would really do anything for us. I think the biggest thing Illinois could do is probably drop it down to $1 tag. That'd be the biggest thing that could help Illinois.
Yeah. And I don't even think forever though. Like,
no, if they did it for 3 or 4 years, you'd see a big jump in quality.
Yeah. Six years.
Yep.
I mean, even then that might be a stretch, but 3 or 4 years for sure. It takes 3 years to make a great, great rack.
Part of me doesn't want it because I enjoy shooting $2, but the other part of me would be like, damn, what's it going to be like when my son's able to hunt? You know, it'd be crazy.
Right. Yeah, because I think of all the one-year-old bucks that are like nice little 8 points.
Or the 150s that we shoot now because we can go out and get another tag and wait on the 160. You know, what would you pass? That's a good
point. Right. There'd be a lot more Boone and Crockett's in Iowa and Illinois if that was the case. Well, in Illinois especially being, you know, because I'll tell you, like, one of my bucks probably wouldn't have got shot.
Yep.
You know, but it all depends, man. It's all situational. But for the most percentages, that's interesting. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Well, the other thing, I think, I hunt Ohio now as well, which I'm actually only like a half an hour from Ohio, from northeastern Ohio. And I notice a big difference even between PA and Ohio. And it's like, how can the genetics be that different when you're only a half an hour apart? But I think a lot of it has to do, too, with their seasons. Like, I wish we would match Ohio seasons. They have an archery season that goes from basically the end of September till the beginning of February, never goes out. But they're, more importantly, like, their gun season is basically a week-long shotgun season, and then there's another couple of days in there. But ours is a two-week rifle season, and that's a big difference. Like, and I mean, I don't know, maybe not, because now a lot of people, I think a lot more people in Pennsylvania are killing their bucks in archery because we made crossbows legal for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe taking away the rifle doesn't really do much. But a two-week rifle season is just being a bow hunter.
Well, it's funny how, you know, how you mentioned growing up, you know, it's kind of just like the tradition. That's the way it is. But, like, once you start bow hunting and dedicating your time and energy, you almost, like, you care for the animals a different way.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you don't want to see them shot on a full blast run and get their leg blown off and have to have 5 follow-up shots. And you know what I mean? Bullets are whizzing by 10-year-old kids on the other side of the ridge. And
well, and shoot, and just killing an animal, you appreciate it a lot more than growing up shotgun hunting. You know, growing up, you just shoot it, and that was the end of it.
Right.
You got it in, you took it to the butcher shop, you know.
Right, right.
Didn't think anything about it.
So that let's do this right now before we move on to other topics while we're still talking on, like, PA and getting into some of the deer drive stuff. Well, first of all, before we do that, is there anything that we should cover about PA? I know there's a listener will hit us up about something we missed, but, I mean, we talked about kind of like some of the tradition, the seasons, what we like, what we don't like, what works, what doesn't work. It's interesting for sure. I would like to go. I would hunt it one day for sure.
I'd like to go out there and just look at the country. I bet it's beautiful out there.
Yeah, likewise, man. That'd be cool.
It is. I have what I like about where I hunt. So I said there are a lot of smaller properties. Like 50 acres is where I am. 50 acres is a good sized property. And that's what my husband and I just bought, 50 acres. We bought an old farmhouse on 50 acres at an auction, actually. And we bought it purely because it was the most beautiful 50 acres we ever saw. We didn't give a shit about the house. we're fixing it up, you know.
Yeah.
That tells you, like, how much we're end up hunting. But what I like about the way I hunt is I either have permission on a lot of different pieces, or my family has a couple small pieces. I have a small piece. You know, my husband and I have a small piece. But I get to see how differently it can vary from property to property.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, one day, the 50 acres I live on, you know, one day that could be real hot and dead the next, but the next day it could be real hot at my dad's house, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice not having, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, right? Like, not having a big piece, because you deal with a lot more pressure with all your neighbors and everything hunting, but you have different pieces that are good on different days and for morning or for evening or for different wind directions. Like, so I hunt a lot of different places, and it's kind of nice, for different reasons. But I think, you know, the property that we bought is, so for example, the square that I hunt in, and I mean, pretty much everything's a square out here. The square that I hunt in is about 1 square mile. I know of probably 10 different people that bow hunt it, and mm-hmm. that's a low pressure square, right? I feel like our square does not get a lot of hunting pressure, and that's 10 people.
I wonder what that's that would crazy. Compare for like Illinois and Iowa.
Yeah.
You take a mile square, how many bow hunters of like decent hunting, like timber, how many bow hunters do you think on average there would be? It's all situational, yeah, so that might be impossible.
If you're talking first week in November, it might surprise you, but if you're talking first week in December, you're going to have 10% of what you had the first week in November.
That's a very good point. Like and I'm sure it's relatively the same in PA.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of people don't even go out till like October 28th, and I'm like kind of the opposite. Well, not the opposite, because I like hunting a rut, but I love early season. I love late season because I feel like I can figure out a deer better.
Right, right. That makes sense. Well, let's get into that here in a second, but let's do this segment real quick. This is the we saved the unpopular opinion segment for you, just because we wanted you to be a part of this convo. That way, if we sound like dick bags, you're a dick bag with us. You know,
we're bringing you down with us.
You know, if we're gonna have a guest and we're gonna look like assholes, they're gonna look like assholes too. Welcome to Working Class Bow Hunter. Mr. Hunter Logan writes in for the unpopular opinion segment. He says deer drives are not hunting. He had a question mark on the end, question so I emphasized mark? On that. Deer drives are not hunting. That would be the and by the way, that doesn't mean he believes this. These are mostly just to stir up a conversation. Yeah.
Kind of stirring the pot a little bit.
And then it tends to piss people off on the internet, which I'm about over, honestly. I'm about to delete our Facebook page in our group.
I like it.
But thank you, Hunter Logan, for really getting ready to stir some shit up with us. That's great. Deer drives are not hunting, and we're going to start with our guest on this one and let her start, and we'll just continue to just bury this one into the dirt. How's that?
All right. I think it is hunting. I think it's just a different style of hunting. Being a bow hunter, it sucks to see, but it happens. As long as you're confident in your shot. But the thing is, how many people practice taking ethical running shots at deer? You can't practice taking a running shot at a deer. I don't know. It's hunting. It's just a different style of hunting that I don't really like.
You're not a fan of it. That's fair. That's a respectful, clean way to put it. Eric, what do you think?
I am not a fan of it anymore. Like, I'm glad I grew up doing it and grew up that way doing it.
Yeah, you know.
I know. I've been there. But now it's just cringy when, right now in shotgun, I drive around on the weekend and around my spots when you see just a bunch of orange in there and you're like, and then you're just waiting for the trail camera to go off and see who made it or not. You know, but it's still, I mean, a lot of people still do it, enjoy it, and I get that.
Fair. The Lord.
Well, we're all bow hunters. We're sitting here, and I think all of us are probably on the same page. Mm-hmm. We would rather not see it happen, but I'm on both sides of the fence because when I was 13, you know, getting into shotgun hunting here in Illinois, that deer drives were a part of shotgun hunting. You know, you go out, you hunt the mornings and you hunt the evenings, and in between, you get the boys together, drink beer, and run through some pieces. And we had a blast doing it. I mean, it's a riot, but it's when you're a bow hunter, it makes you kind of cringe when you see the truck start rolling in. So,
great.
I can see both sides of that argument.
Is it hunting?
I would say that it is hunting. But it can get pretty sloppy.
Doug?
I agree with the Lord. It is hunting, and I grew up doing it too, and I understand it. I understand why people do it. Because, I mean, you got a short span to hunt.
Right.
But, I mean, as a bow hunter, you don't like to see it anymore, but it is what it is. As long as you're safe. As long as you're safe about it and smart, but I know you don't see that too much.
Here's what I think. Is it hunting? Maybe. And the reason why I say is because I think there is ways to do a deer drive that might be effective to where you're not necessarily running a deer to exhaustion and then blasting at him like he's, you know, a terrorist.
Maybe pushing some scent in there. A pressure push is what we talked about.
Pressure push.
You let your scent float in there and just kind of gradually works the deer out, and maybe somebody's waiting on the other end for
him. You can almost do a pressure push like that with a bow.
Archery tackle.
That'd be fun. And I don't think that's... we're kind of like riding the gray area with this question because is it hunting or is it not? I think You know, I'm going to be the guy that kind of stiffs this a little bit just to make it interesting. I've been on two deer drives. Have I been the driver? No. Have I ever killed a deer in a deer drive? No. And I've muzzleloader is what I had. So,
you're always a sitter.
I was a sitter. I've been twice. It was when I was young, and I'll be honest, I wasn't a fan of it then. And that's how I know I don't like it. I don't think it's hunting when you consider the classic deer drive, the running through and deer running, you hear guys blasting off 12 shots and it's going crazy. That I don't think is hunting. There's no tactic in the hunt. There's no real strategy in the hunt with that. It's kind of, well, there's a hedgerow. Let's walk through it and blast anything that runs out, yeah, just because, yeah, we want to kill something.
You lose the romance of that encounter. It kind of defeats the purpose for me. The whole point is, yeah, to have that encounter and get your blood pumping, and with a drive, it just seems like, yeah, well, there he goes, running by, let's blast him.
Right, and perspectives change. Like, we've all said this pretty much. Like, we've done it when we were younger.
Yep.
We've become experienced bow hunters. We've generated a love and a care for the game of what bow hunting is, and maybe games is not the right term, but the strategy, the effort, the planning, the love of what it all encompasses of being a successful bow hunter on certain deer. That is all out the window with that. And I think it's kind of like the dude that goes and plays pig. And here I am making another basketball reference. Going to play pig at the fucking park, or a dude that's really trying to do something good, you know, and sink three-pointers every time, you know?
It's like chess and checkers, you know?
Yeah, that's right. That's a better comparison.
Shit's chess. It ain't checkers.
So there it is. There's the unpopular opinion segment. Go
can
ahead.
Can I say how it relates to Pennsylvania, though, is I've heard a lot of people complaining lately in Pennsylvania that in gun season, they're just not seeing nearly as many deer as they used to 10 or 20 years ago. And they're saying, oh, there's no deer here. There's no deer here. And I'll tell you, that's not true. There's a ton of deer here. I think the problem is, and I don't know that it's a problem, but I think what's happening is there are less people doing deer drives and more people sitting in box blinds. And so the deer aren't moving all day long in gun season like they used to. They're moving naturally. So it forces people to, like, have to actually do something and figure it out rather than sit in their box blind all day.
Interesting take. That's probably spot on, I would say. That makes perfect sense. It's patience is a learned thing, and it's hard to expect someone that only hunts a week a year to have the same patience as a bow hunter and figures things out, you know, because it's a learn, like, to sit there, it takes some skill, honestly, you know. It's different.
Yeah,
it's definitely different. Yeah. Well, that's cool. That was a good segment. I liked that. Turned out way better than I thought. I thought we were going to really ruffle some feathers there, but we didn't. I don't think. I mean, no, somebody's going to be pissed no matter what we do. Oh, fuck. I said fuck. Everybody freak out. I just read a forum that completely shit on us because we say fuck. We're the low-class bow hunters, what they said we should be called.
Kurt said it hurt him deep inside.
Deep down for a little bit, like, I was kind of bothered. I'm like, man, come on. Fuck you guys.
Yeah. Come on, man.
But then I realized it's like, you know, if we didn't cuss and didn't do whatever we want to do, this wouldn't be any fun.
That's why it's relatable.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck yourself. How about that?
Yeah, go fuck off.
In your forearm.
Hey, go piss up a rope, pal.
Go drill some holes in aluminum tube or whatever you do. I don't know. All right. Back to the podcast. I don't know. That's what they – it was the forum I was on, okay? It was the drill holes in tubes forum. It was cut the ends of your toothbrushes off forum.
Low-class bow hunter. I like that.
That's kind of sweet.
Should we change it?
I would tomorrow.
Should we make a shirt?
There's a lot of legal
shitbag bow hunters.
Hey, we'd probably do better. Let's talk about, so you killed a PA buck this year.
I did kill a PA buck. Okay, yeah, we're kind of going backwards, but that's okay.
Okay, so here's why I wanted to go backwards, because we've just been on this PA train.
Yeah.
But we don't have to go backwards. It's your podcast.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I just killed a PA buck, last Thursday. I don't know what day it is in podcast land, but...
Podcast land. Nice reference. You're part of the team.
She is a listener.
Yeah. She's a quick learner.
Yeah.
No, I did kill a PA buck. I honestly, I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but I did the right thing. I killed a wounded buck. He was already wounded when I saw him, and I felt the need to put him out of his misery. So I did kill a PA buck. It was nowhere near, I guess, the caliber of buck that I had my heart set on. I was fully prepared to actually take my PA tag in the late season because we have a killer late season food plot this year. And I had a couple of bucks on camera that are still alive that I was really hoping to get a shot at with my bow. But I had a good season, and I'm sure we're going to do this, but I had a good season in, you know, Montana and Ohio with my bow. So I came to terms with the fact that I use my PA tag on a gun, you know, a average gun buck, I guess.
That's doing the right thing, though.
Yeah.
It's a tough call to make.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough call. I guess I've got a soft heart. I'm still, you know, a girl when it comes to seeing wounded animals. And, I mean, he was a good buck. He's a respectable buck. And I even feel bad calling him average because I think he's probably above average for a Pennsylvania buck. But for me, you know, I'm looking for that buck that gets me really excited. And
what would get you excited in PA?
I don't, right now, honestly, I don't even want to say, like, it's not a score. It's just having the history and kind of having that chess match with them. That's what I really like.
Yeah.
So I have a buck on camera that I believe is still alive. I don't know for sure because I don't have any recent pictures of him. But I believe he's still alive, and he's a 6.5-year-old buck. I've been following him for 4 years. I have his sheds from last year. He is a giant by any standards, not just PA standards. And I really kind of had my heart set on him or nothing because, like I said, I already had a good season in other states. And, you know, I've been trying to figure him out. And I found his sheds, like, in his bed. So now I know where he bedded a lot. I saw him come out of that bedding area a lot in the summer when I was kind of glassing fields in the evening. And so I kind of had my heart set on one buck. And it was kind of a tough pill to swallow, but I knew I had to do the right thing.
Hey, I praise you for that. I think that's great. I got sent a video of somebody that's well known in the game that filmed a buck that had a huge wound in his back, like at 10 yards, and didn't do anything about it. And to me, that's kind of rough.
Oh yeah. That's a tough call to make.
I would, you know, it depends on the wound and all that, but you know, that's kind of an honorable thing to do in my book. So I praise you for that. I think you did the right thing. I think that speaks volumes about your ethics and your personality and who you are as a person. So congrats on that. That's really kick ass.
And that was a stud buck too that you shot.
That's what I thought too. I thought it was a stud.
Thank you. Well, you know, it was kind of special because I was hunting with my dad, which I mean, archery season, I hunt alone all year. I don't normally hunt with anybody unless it's gun season and one of us is tagged out, because if we both had tags, we'd, you know, be throwing elbows at each other in the blind. But I was hunting with my dad, so it's kind of special. It's just not something I do often these days. And
yeah,
he was only walking on three legs, this buck, and you could just tell he was struggling. We had over a foot of snow, and actually I probably could have called the game commission and forfeited the deer and got a new tag because the meat wasn't any good. But even then, it's like, I don't need to shoot another buck. If I have plenty of doe tags because we got extra doe tags for like crop damage. So it's like, if I need more meat, which I really don't, I mean, we eat venison every day. But I got an elk this year and stuff. So it's like, we didn't really need the meat. So I don't need to kill more deer.
Right.
So I don't know. I could have called the game commission and gotten a replacement tag, but I don't really need to kill another buck. So
that's fair. So
yeah.
Can you shoot a buck with your bow now then too, or is it just one of the? No.
No.
One and done.
One and done.
One. Yeah. Pennsylvania is a one buck state. What I mean, no matter the weapon. Like I said, I've got a few doe tags that I probably will use a couple of on our own property in late season, and either like we'll turn that meat into snack sticks or something, or we'll give it to some of our friends that don't hunt or friends and family that just didn't get a deer, just to kind of manage the does on our property, because there's nights where I see, you know, dozens of does and not a single buck.
Right. Well, hey, for time's sake, let's move on. I know you had we are going backwards here, but I just want to go in like relation from topic to topic, you know. You killed a buck in Ohio.
Yes. I killed a good buck in Ohio with my bow, so that was exciting. We got a – so I've hunted Ohio for the past, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, but just like northeastern Ohio, which is only like 30 minutes from my house. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to hunt southern Ohio because I knew like there's just been a lot of big bucks coming out of that area. And so I've had my eye on, I've been looking for a lease for a couple years, and I have a group of, you know, my husband, my dad, my father-in-law, and a couple of our buddies that wanted to go together and get a lease. And, you know, I kind of felt like a lot of pressure being the one to pick the lease, but they kind of put me in charge of it. And I've been looking at different properties for a couple of years, and I finally found one that I felt like, you know, was a good fit for our group of guys. And
all I'm going to say real quick is Ohio has been on this podcast radar lately, and I think we should all pitch in and get a working class Ohio lease.
Yes.
That's a lot of pressure to choose. Everyone's relying on you to choose the lease. Like, so what's this place sucks?
Well, here's what we'll do. Listeners out there, if you guys know of a piece of property for lease in Ohio, send it our way. We'll have Rachel take a peek over it, let us know, and then we'll negotiate price with her math brain.
Yeah.
So note to you, sure, don't try and fuck us because we'll show you the facts. I'm just kidding, but if you have a lease, send it over. We'll look at it.
Yeah, take a look at it.
Sorry about that. I had to just make a claim here.
Or just invite me over.
Hey, I'm going to Ohio.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we'll just all go to Clint's house.
There we go.
I'm bringing Drew Carey with me.
But, no, so I got this lease, and honestly, like, the way I had to get it, I had to basically buy it sight unseen because I knew it would just go that quickly. And so then it was in the spring, and, like, so we all went down to just kind of scout it one weekend. And everyone else is kind of like, this place sucks. What were you thinking? You know, and I'm just like, fuck.
Like, I'd be so worried. I think that would do that.
Oh, after you had already bought it, you guys went and scouted it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm following you.
Then I felt shitty. So, like, I'm wasting everyone's money, you know, because, like, we already paid for it. But it, to me, okay, I had only e-scouted it, right? Like, just looking at maps. And it looked good to me. And then we went and boots on the ground, and everyone's like, this sucks. And so
good job, Rachel. So,
they don't know shit, apparently.
Way to go.
Well, we were – okay, so then, you know, we're getting ready – and, like, pretty much the same group of guys. We're getting ready to go on an elk hunt out to Montana this fall. So all we really had time to do – so, okay, so baiting is legal in Ohio, but our theory was – we can't compete with neighboring properties that keep bait out constantly. Like, we live 4 hours, 4.5 hours away from this property. We just can't keep bait there. So, I mean, we're just going to rely on, like, traditional tactics that we would do in Pennsylvania where we can't bait. And, you know, that's, like, pinch points, funnels, that's scrapes, that's, you know, just typical non-baiting tactics. And, so anyway, we go down in, I think, August, and we hang some stands and set out some cameras, and that was it. That's all we got to do for the property, and then we got ready to go to Montana in September. Well, I put out a cell camera, and this is the first time I've used cell cameras, and there was, like, no service on the property, so there was only, like, one place on the whole property that I could get good enough service to put my cell camera on top of this ridge. And I also hung a stand nearby. And everyone else is like, this is a stupid spot, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. I like the looks of this spot. It was kind of, like, on a bench towards the top of the ridge. And I don't know. I like the spot. I hung a stand there, and I hung my cell camera there. Well, the first buck we got on camera was probably a 180-inch deer.
I've
never seen a buck that big. And I actually sent it to Clint. I've become good friends with Clint over the past couple of years, and I sent it to Clint, and I'm like, is this fucking normal for Ohio? Because, like, we don't have this shit.
Dude, Ohio's got the biggest deer.
That's where the record bucks are coming out of Ohio, I heard.
I guarantee I knew what happened. Clint called you and freaked the fuck out.
You need to be in there, and you need to be ready for first 4 days of season. You want to get it there and
just
kill them.
Screaming at you.
Listen, slug two bush lights and get the fuck in there. Is that what he did?
That's exactly how it went. It's funny because I was listening to...
Sounds just like him.
It's funny. I was listening to your episode with Emily, and where, like, he did the same thing to her, and it worked out a lot better for her than it did for me, by the way. But he did the same thing. He's like, you got to get down there, because what happened was, the first week of October, which was his red moon days, there, I had on cell camera 3 days in a row, I had that buck in daylight by 20 yards from my stand on my cell camera.
I'd and be here driving I am. There.
I'm in Pennsylvania, and I can't do anything about it. Yeah. Oh, so Clint's like, you got to get down there. You got to get down there right fucking now. And so it was like a Thursday, right? Or no, it was a Wednesday night. I text Clint, and I was like, that's the third time this week he's been by my stand. He goes, you got to go tomorrow. Drop everything and go tomorrow. So I took Thursday off work. I couldn't get anybody to go with me. And so I took Thursday off work. I drove 4.5 hours by myself. And here I'm thinking, it's the first week of October. Why would I hunt mornings, you know? So I drive down in the morning, and I get there early afternoon, 4.5 hour drive. I have to hang my stand. It's like 70 degrees. So we only pre-hung sticks, and because we didn't, there's six of us, and I don't know, we didn't want to hang like a bunch of stands. I didn't want to have to buy that. We're working class, right? Like, we don't have to buy that many extra stands for our lease. So we're like, we'll hang sticks. Everyone can carry their stand in every time they go. And, you know, that way we only need six stands, even though we have like 12 sticks.
Right. Makes sense.
So
you're like, I like the tactic. It's like mobile, but kind of thought out.
Mobile, but not. Yeah. So I get down there early afternoon. I'm like, it's a mile walk. I tracked it on my Garmin. It was like 0.9 something miles to my stand.
Mile walk, but if it's on the internet, it was 8.
Up the hill. It was like 70 degrees. I'm like sweating my ass off. Like, this is stupid. I drove all this way. Now I'm sweaty. Now I'm stinky. And I'm trying to hang my stand. My arms, I told you I'm 5 feet tall. My arms are like 2 feet long. I can't get this stand hung. I'm cussing Clint out for convincing me that this was a good idea.
You fucking asshole.
I get the stand hung, and then I'm like, this is stupid. I made noise. I am stinky. I'm not going to see a deer. And I didn't. I didn't see a deer. Like I said, it worked out a lot better for Emily.
Well, here's the thing. In Clint's defense, if you would have killed them, you'd be singing a different tune. Better to try than not.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, here's what happened, though, is my cell camera, because it has shitty service, the battery drains quickly. So what I, instead of having it send me a picture every single time it's triggered, I have it send me a picture once a day, or send me all the pictures once a day. And so after dark, I get out of there. I get back to my truck. I drive 4.5 hours home. And I've drove 9 hours to hunt like 3. And I call Clint on the way home, and I'm like, that was fucking stupid. I can't believe you convinced me to do that. And he's like, oh, I gotta go. I got a podcast. I'm not kidding. That was the night he podcasted with you. So anyway, but while I'm halfway home, and my cell camera, my pictures for the whole day come in. That motherfucker was at my stand at 9:30 in the morning in early October. I should have been there the whole day. But who would hunt? I mean, I never thought of hunting a morning. I don't know. I was so – now I'm like, what do I do? Do I turn around, go back, call in sick on Friday, and hunt the morning on Friday? Maybe I'll do it again. And I'm like, no, I can't lose my job over this. Like, I have to go back to work. So I kept driving home. I got home at like 1 in the morning, and it was stupid. So – That's how my Ohio season started. But that's the buck I really like had my heart set on in Ohio. But
hey, listen, Clint made the right call for you. He convinced you to do the right thing. It's just,
I know,
your swing through wasn't there. It's all good, though. It doesn't
always play out.
It can't always be right on, you know.
It was funny, though. But then after that, because originally my plan for hunting Ohio, because it's a 4.5 hour drive, I'm thinking I'm not going to hunt that till late October when I can actually start hunting all day long. Like, why would I drive down there to only hunt the evening? But now my plans changed. I was like, well, if I've got that kind of bucks on camera, I'll hunt there early season too. So I started going down to Ohio every weekend in October, and I barely hunted PA. Well, the third weekend I went down there, my husband couldn't go. He had to work. So I convinced my father, and my dad couldn't go. I convinced my father-in-law to go. So I'm like, sorry, husband, me and your dad are going on a hunting trip. And we left, and we get down there, and so I had seen there's the way we walk into this. It's so hard to explain. The way we walk into this property, there's like a couple old overgrown ag fields with a creek bottom running through, and it's a row of very old mature oaks that line this creek bottom between the two old overgrown ag fields, right? And then like once you get past those fields, then it's just a lot of timber, a good section of bedding. Like it's a clean property, but so we had kind of walked past that creek bottom a lot and never really noticed it. But the one time I walked by, I'm like, there's three scrapes in a row under this one oak tree. I'm just going to put a camera there. Well, I put a camera there, and instantly we got pictures of bucks hitting that camera in the mornings in daylight. And so I thought, like, this is kind of a weird spot to hunt a morning. Like, you know, I don't normally hunt field edges in mornings, but mm-hmm. I mean, they're there. So we go down, this is October 23rd, and it's going to be like 80 degrees that day. And it just seemed the next day it was only going to be 50 degrees. So I thought the following day was going to be the good day to kill. But I in the morning I go in and I sit this one row of trees on the creek bottom near that scrape. And I mean, I was in the stand, I'm thinking, this is stupid. Why am I doing this? I know better than to hunt a field edge in the morning. Right. This is the dumbest idea you ever had. And then like 45 minutes into daylight, here comes buck. And all I see is antlers going through this tall grass. Cause like I said, these are old ag fields, are just overgrown mm-hmm. and haven't been farmed in ever forever. And he's walking away from me. And I'm like, wow, that's a really good buck. Like that's a shooter. But he's walking away from me. Well, all of a sudden he turns and he starts walking towards me. I'm like, why the fuck? Like, why did he just turn like that? And I didn't call him, nothing. And I'm like, why did he just turn and start walking towards me? That's weird. Well, I couldn't see, but he was trailing a doe. And like, that's how overgrown these fields are. And so the doe kind of crosses through a shooting lane I had. I range her at 30 yards and I get ready thinking he's going to pass through that same shooting lane. And all of a sudden I see another buck behind him. And now both bucks, this is October 23rd, mind you, both bucks start chasing this doe back and forth in front of me. And the other one was actually bigger, but I told myself, like, both of them are shooters. I've hunted PA my whole life. To me, I'm just not at the point where I can pass 130-inch deer, and I knew both of them were over 130, or around there at least. And so I said, whichever one gives you a shot first, you got to take that buck. And so the smaller of the two, he kind of peeled away from that doe. He came up and hit the scrape right in front of me. It was like 18 yards. And then he turned, and he starts walking just broadside and like towards that doe. And he stops on his own. I didn't have to stop him. And, you know, I drew back. I settled my pin right behind his shoulder. And I just remember in that moment telling myself, like, back off that shoulder. Because all summer, you know, I had been shooting, like, 80, 100 yards, just, like, practicing for my elk hunt. Mm-hmm. And I remember just telling myself, like, back off that shoulder. And, like, yes, it's a chip shot, but don't fuck it up. And I don't know if I backed off too far or if he took a step or what. But I remember as soon as I shot, I saw it hit and pass through, but like that high and back. And I'm like, shit, immediately. I'm like, that's liver. You know, I'm going to wait a couple hours. It's going to be 80 degrees. We're only a couple hundred yards from the neighbors. You never know. Like, I don't know the area. Like, this sucks. I just start panicking. But as I watched him run off, I saw it like in slow motion. I can just replay this in my head. I just saw blood pouring from him. Watched him go down. It was the coolest shit. That was with my Clyde arrow. So Clint was one of the first calls I made. Or I texted him. I said, big buck down. He called me right away. He's at work. And he was just so pumped up. It was just a really cool learning where it was like, I doubted myself, like, why would you sit a field in the morning? This is stupid. But it paid off.
It just goes to show that you can't take one tactic or one thing that people say and apply it to all situations. Mm-hmm. Like, we can sit here and get the best person that knows how to hunt deer in X situation. Everything with hunting is situational. Not everything applies across the board.
And especially on a new property. You don't know that new property for, you know.
Right.
Good for you reading the intel that you had, having those that trail camera going and seeing those pictures in the morning in the daylight. I mean, good for you. You did the right thing.
Well, that right there just proves, like, that is why it's dumb to argue on Facebook. Like, everybody does. Like, you go through our unpopular opinion. There's a lot of funny, and people are doing over-the-top sarcasm-type topics for
funny
us to,
stuff
for
which
us to do
we
it,
appreciate
but I mean there's people that take that type of thread and apply it anywhere, and people will argue to the death over it. It's like, yo bro, until you've killed a deer doing something, like, you don't have an argument here,
right?
You know, like, shut your fucking mouth. You didn't you don't know anything about what you're talking about. So that's great though. That's awesome. I mean, that, like, you took the information, you took a chance, you went in, and it worked out great for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny because I'm like, in my head, I'm also kind of like, haha, you guys thought this property was going to suck, but like, we've got so many good bucks on camera, although they've struggled to hunt that lease ever since.
Well, they're just not as good as a hunter as you. That's just plain and simple, right?
yeah, that's it.
So the question is, are you going to lease it next year?
Yeah, but
she's got to fork up all the money.
It's a great property. We've just had some issues with, like, the landowner and stuff, so that's a whole other conversation.
Well, if the other guys don't want to lease it, I think we got a group of working-class bow hunter guys that probably go down
we'll
on it.
We'll be your best friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll podcast every time we hunt.
You know what's so fun about – and, like, people kind of hate on having leases and stuff, but you know what's so fun about it is, like, we bought a little pop-up camper and we leave it down there so we don't have to tow it back and forth. And it's just like a mini little deer camp. It's like when I hunt around my house, I come home and I'm like, okay, now I got to clean. Now I got to cook. Now I got all these other things I got to be doing. But it's like when I'm down there, you're going to come back and hunt. And it's just like you sit around camp and drink a beer and you don't give a shit about anything else that's going on. And I love it. So, yeah, I definitely want to keep it.
Well, cool. Congrats on that. Two states, two success stories. Sorry, the bush light. Well, let's talk about elk, because you kept mentioning, like, you know, I was getting ready for elk in Montana. And you kept kind of dropping hints there. And let's talk about 5 foot nothing Rachel going to walk up some mountains and shit.
Oh, my God. I think I'm more proud of my elk than any buck I've ever killed. And I mean, I love deer hunt. Like, if I had to choose, I would deer hunt, but I'm so proud of that elk. We went elk hunting in 2019. That was the first time I ever went out west. And, you know, I thought I prepared really well for it. I knew what to expect. But it's like, no matter how much you prepare, if you've never been out west, like, just driving in and seeing the mountains, you're like, holy fuck. Like, I'm a flatlander, you know?
What are these things? What are those? What are those?
I'm going to start with, okay, so it all started, too, because I went to a gun raffle back home with one of my girlfriends, and we got seated at a table with, like, some old guys, and I mean, no offense to them, but they're old school, and they were like, oh, do you hunt? And I'm like, yeah, I hunt, you know, mostly deer. I've killed a lot of good deer, you know, but I'm going to go elk hunting this year, and the guy, like, laughed in my face. And,
really?
Yeah, and he goes, well, with a gun? I was like, no, with my bow. And he literally is like, you can't do that. You can't, you know, you can't kill an elk. And I'm like, the fuck, I can't.
Do you know his name?
And
do you know his name? Call him out right now.
Put him on blast.
Put him on blast.
I don't know. I wish I did, because I'll tell you, once I killed my bull, all I wanted to do was, like, when we were quartering that bull, all I wanted to do is cut his nuts off and mail it to this guy.
like, nail it to his front door.
Just the sack.
Like, I was just so pissed because, I mean, I don't give a shit what people think, but, like, he made me doubt myself, and I hate that. You know what I mean? But I get it. You know, he's kind of – and so what he did was, he's like, well, tell me you're going with an outfitter. And I was like, no, we're going public land. Like, do it yourself. And he's like, you're wasting your time. Here's an outfitter's number. You call him. And I'm like, you know what? Not everyone can afford to go with an outfitter. And personally, yeah, maybe I could go with an outfitter, but I like doing shit myself. I would rather fail and, like, have learned something, you know, or just, I mean, we do everything ourselves from, this, like, even processing our own gear. Like, we build a walk-in cooler, and we do everything ourselves, and I don't like relying on other people. For me, it's part of the experience, and, like, even tuning my own bow, you know what I mean? My husband will not touch my bow. He was a bow guy growing up, worked at his dad's bow shop, but he will not touch my bow because he's like, no, I can't be your husband and your bow tech. Like, he's like, if I fuck something up, you're going to be pissed. So he teaches me how to do it. I do it myself. And
very cool.
So I'm like, you know, I was like, I appreciate you giving me this outfitter's number, but, like, we're going public.
But kick rocks, bud.
That's what you should have said. That's working class for you.
Yeah. That's very cool. But, I mean, how cocky of him. Like, what an a-hole. That's the same dude that's on forums cussing about how we say the F-bomb. That's that guy. Fuck you. So, hey, there it is. Sorry, got out of my system. Back to your story.
No, exactly. I left the table because we had, like, assigned seating, so I left the table and I just went past the bar the rest of the night because I didn't want to talk to him.
Nice.
But, I mean, it just sucked because he did. He, like, I mean, in a way, he made me doubt myself, but in a way, he made me work harder because that's just, like, how I'm motivated.
Yeah,
like,
I can't fail
now.
Oh,
I'm going to prove you wrong. And,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You done fucked up.
And then, Andy, my husband, did the same thing when I started. So he goes, if we're going elk hunting, you got to know how to bugle. And so I would practice bugling. And I would never let him hear me because he'd make fun of me. So, like, I would practice while he was at work. And one day he comes home and I work, you know, I use mouth calls, turkey calling growing up, but elk calling is way different. So, like, oh, I can do this, you know, and it's hard. But he comes home one day and I was like, listen, I can bugle. And I let a bugle rip, and Andy's like, I mean, it was all right, but it needs some work. And I was so deflated because I was, like, so proud of it. You know, like, really, I thought that was really good. But like, months later, he told me, he's like, no, that bugle was really good. I just knew if I told you it sucked that you would work harder because, like, that's what motivates me, you know?
Those mind games.
And
nice.
Mind games.
Get out of my head.
So, I mean, so elk hunting, like, the first year we went, I knew what to expect. I knew it was a very low probability of us having any success. But, you know, we, in a week's time, I think we hiked, like, 80 miles. We had three really close encounters. Like, I drew back on a bull. I just couldn't get a shot. Like, I considered it a success, right? Like, we had a blast. And then, but I wanted to go back a second year. So this year, 2020, we went back to Montana again. And I just worked so much harder preparing and just kind of learning about everything and ski scouting. But also, like, I bought a pass to our local ski resort. I hiked up. I would, like, load up my pack with a bunch of weight and hike up the ski slopes all summer long to kind of train.
That's a really good idea.
That is a good idea.
I mean, and tuning my bow, like, I really fine-tuned my setup this year. I got as heavy of an arrow as I could and, you know, made sure my broadheads, I use a fixed blade, made sure my broadheads were flying perfect with my field points out to 60. Like, it was so funny because he would sit in his lawn chair and he would just, like, have a beer and watch me. And I would get so pissed off because, you know, I had my field points. I was shooting out to, like, 100 yards of my field points. And then I put my broadheads on and they just, like, weren't tuned right. And people, you know, again, that's another thing people hate on is fixed blade broadheads. But it's like, if your bow is tuned right, you can get them to fly right, right? So he would sit there and watch me and just laugh at me because I'm getting so pissed off. And it's like, once you're pissed off and you're shooting your bow, you're not going to shoot
your
bow.
Yeah, you're done. Well. You're so done. You might as well quit.
You've got to come back the next day. And so it's like day after day. And finally, I got my eyesight in my okay, so this year I shot an IQ. I shot an HHA in the past, and I think I want to go back to an HHA, but I want to get that 4-pin because for me, there is a huge difference between 20 and 30 and 30 and 40. And if I don't have time to adjust that, it bothers me. So I kind of want to go to their HHA 4-pin where you do
you
have
mean for like your poundage and draw length and all that?
Yeah, because I, yeah, the short,
Oh, that makes sense. Never thought about that.
Lower poundage, you know. But I worked to increase my poundage and stuff. And so, but he was sitting there watching me. And finally, one day I got it where my broadhead flew perfect in my field point at 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, like five shots in a row. And I just wanted to like spike my bow and be like, fuck yes. But
you shit asshole.
But obviously I didn't want to do that. But so anyway, that was 2 weeks before we went out of Montana. And I was just so confident in my shot. So we get out there and we drive 30 out. We got married this summer, so this was our honeymoon. I called it our honeymoon. Was going to Montana. Nice.
Pretty good deal there.
We get out there, we drive 30 hours straight to get there. Cause I'm like, look, if we're taking 2 weeks off work, I'm not trying to stay in a hotel and like take my time. Like, let's get out there and hunt. So we drive 30 hours straight to get out there. We get out there and like, there's hunters everywhere that we planned on trying to set up our base camp, and like plans A, B, C, D, E, like everything's out the window. And so we literally drove around another 6 hours driving around the mountains once we got there trying to find a place to set up our base camp. And Andy goes, well, hey, maybe we could just go to town, get a hotel for the night, have like a nice romantic honeymoon night, and then we'll figure it out tomorrow. And I'm like, listen, I love you and I would love to have a nice romantic night with you, but like I live with you, so we can do that later. Like, I came to hunt. So we finally found a place to camp, and he was like, that's why I married you, you know. So we finally found a place to camp at like right towards dark, set up camp, and next morning we're like, all right, let's kind of just scout the area, because this wasn't an area we really planned on. Like, I had e-scouted all these other areas, and of course, this isn't a place we really planned on hunting. So we set out that next morning, and sure shit, we hear a bugle, like, right as we're heading out of camp. And I'm like, holy shit, like, this is too good to be true. Like, maybe it's a hunter. And we're like, well, let's close the distance before we start calling. And then we'll get a little closer and then we'll try to call. Well, so I look on X and I'm like, all right, he looks like he's just down, you know, where it sounded like he came from. He's down this ridge. There's like this tiny little meadow, at kind of the point of this ridge, and let's get down there and it's set up and then try to call. So we're not even 45 minutes into our hunt. Like, we haven't even hiked. It was like 3/4 of a mile. And we were walking towards like where we wanted to go set up, and I'm kind of leading, and I'm like, Andy, there's an elk. There's a fucking elk right there, like 100 yards. And I'm like, he's like, oh my God. Well, he said, how do you want to set up? I'm like, okay, well, and for, you know, two idiots from Pennsylvania, like, we didn't really know what we were doing, but I'm like, all right, well, the wind's coming this way, so why don't you drop back and off to the upwind side, and you know, we're already close, so don't bugle, but just cow call and see if you can get his interest in that way. If he comes up towards you, he's coming upwind of me, and maybe I can get a shot. And so he drops back, you know, 30 yards off to my upwind side, and he cow calls. And sure as shit, this bull picks his head up, starts walking towards him. I'm like, oh, my God, this is happening. So I start ranging trees, and he gets closer, and I'm like, okay, he's going to walk by that tree. Behind that tree, it's 40 yards. When he's behind that tree, I'm going to draw back. But also at the same time, I'm thinking, well, this is cool. Like, it's our first morning, and we already saw an elk. Like, you know, even if nothing else happens the rest of the trip, like, it was successful. And I'm like, wait, focus. Like, you actually might shoot this elk, you know?
Yeah.
And so he wait goes behind that tree. I draw back, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, I'm at full drawing on that elk, you know? Even if you don't kill him, like, this is cool. You drew back. Like, this is better than last year. And then he steps out from behind that tree, and I cow call so that he stops. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to shoot this elk. And I kind of blacked out at that point. Like, I knew he was at 40. I put my 40-yard pin on him. I let it fly. And, I mean, it looked like it hit pretty good. It buried to the fletching, which, like, I was so pumped with. And, I mean, I knew, like, I'm not going to get a pass through an elk. And I he kind of disappeared, ran and disappeared over the ridge. And I look at Andy and I'm like, holy shit, did that just happen? Like, we're literally 45 minutes into our hunt. We're not even 3/4 of a mile from camp. And I just killed a bull. And like last year we killed ourselves hiking 80 miles and didn't have that opportunity. Like it was insane. So yeah, that was my story.
That's awesome.
Drive 30 hours to hunt for an hour.
I know. Well, it's funny. So, and then the other two guys that were coming with us, it was my father-in-law and our buddy Dave. They left later and they stayed overnight halfway. They didn't drive straight through like we did. And so on my Garmin inReach, I send them a message. I'm like, we already shot a bull. And they're like, they're like 8 hours away. They're like, no fucking way. And so they're trying to drive fast to get there. And Clint was in, I think, Utah at the same time. And he was one of the first people I texted. I'm like, bull down. He had a bull down. Or he was like, you know, I'm surrounded by bulls. I'm going to have a bull down shortly. I mean, it was a pretty cool experience.
That's badass.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Congratulations. Talk about getting it done quick, man.
That's a season right there.
Absolutely.
Well, the best part about all of it is this bull. Okay, so I've tracked a lot of whitetail in my life. Like, I go on every possible track I can. I think it's probably my favorite part, even if like it wasn't my deer. I love tracking deer. And, you know, I always think deer run A, downhill and towards water. So this elk, I'm thinking, he disappeared over the ridge. And I'm like, he probably went downhill towards the creek this way down there. And turns out he ran uphill and he died actually above camp. So our pack out, and I don't know, there's something fun about the misery of like packing out an elk. It's just satisfying what sucks. And our pack out was 1/4 mile downhill. That's it.
That's awesome.
I mean, it was like the easiest pack out ever. And my father-in-law picked up the head and the antlers. He wanted to pack that out. And I was like, get that off your pack. Like,
get the fuck out.
It has my head. And so I packed it out. But the rest of the trip really was a struggle. Cause then I was caller. Andy was shooter after that. And the harder part, I mean, I give Andy a lot of credit cause he called up that bull in, but the harder part is calling. I mean, making the shot is really not that difficult. So after that, I was more pumped about getting a bull to respond to my bugle. Like when I bugled and I had a bull bugle back, that was the coolest thing. I felt like, okay, I just fooled a bull. He thinks I'm another bull. That's insane. So we had a couple close encounters the rest of the trip, like trying to get Andy a bull, but no luck. Like the rest of the trip was a struggle, but it's just so fun. Like there's something fun about the struggle, you know? I mean, we laughed so hard. We hunt really hard, but we also, like, made sure it was fun.
Yeah, you gotta have fun to stay sane there.
That's the thing. Like, if you haven't hunted out west, for people who live out east, to hunt out west, or even Midwest, like, to hunt out west, it's just a different experience. It's just so cool.
I definitely would need to go elk hunting very soon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely on the bucket list. And true, too, like Doug said, like, if you go out there and you don't even see a bull or hear a bull bugle for a whole week, it's, like, kind of...
Yeah, it can be brutal. Yeah. That's awesome to have success in the first couple hours of the hunt.
Usually doesn't go that way.
That's awesome. No, it never works out. And that's why I'm glad I struggled so much the first year.
Yep.
Right.
Because I still feel like I earned it, you know?
Yeah.
It's more about... And it really was more about all the work I put in the off season kind of to like, you know, physically be in shape, but also shooting to make sure I had the best possible setup for me because I do have a short draw length. I do have a lighter arrow, you know, just to make sure I could make that shot and make it count. And even just to know how to set up, right? Like when that situation presents itself, like, just to know how to execute in that moment and not panic. I mean, all of the work goes in, I mean, probably hundreds of hours of preparation, and it comes down to that second. And it's so cool.
Absolutely.
Well, I hope the guy that you sat down at the table with got to hear that podcast.
I mean, he probably won't. He's probably 80 years old. He probably doesn't know what a podcast I want to find that guy because that pissed me off.
Rachel goes to that same bar every night till she sees him again. Hey, asshole, come here and sit down next to me. I got a story for you.
Hey, you piece of shit, sit down. I'll buy you hams.
Buy you a Boilermaker.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Congrats. What a killer season, huh? Yeah. Taxidermy bill is expensive.
Oh, my God. Well, it's funny because, like, my taxidermist started giving me a volume discount.
Volume discount. Wow, you earned it, huh?
Cocky. I like
that. That's how you know things are going good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, so my taxidermist was kind of pissed at me last year because the buck I killed last year was a buck he had been I live, like, a couple miles from my taxidermist, and he had been hunting the same buck, and I didn't know it. So I killed the buck. I put it on, you know, Facebook, and he texted me, and he goes, I've been on that buck all year.
Find a different taxidermist.
You really pissed in his Cheerios that year, didn't you?
Old barn taxidermy. Yeah. That's funny. Well, congrats. Killer season for 5 foot nothing. You're sure acting like you're a lot bigger than that. Climbing mountains being 5 foot tall has to be exhausting.
Well, I mean, it is, but I mean, that's just how, like, I've always been. It's like, you just got to work harder than everybody else. And be like, I mean, being a woman too, I feel like, you know, you do get a lot of people like that, that doubt you or think you're doing it for the wrong reason or whatever. So it's just, you got to work harder to, like, prove yourself and earn some respect. And I mean, I may not be the best hunter in the world. I'm not a big buck killer, like, compared to most of the people you talk to, but I work my ass off, and almost to the point where it's like embarrassing because it's like, well, she tries hard.
You little pat in the back.
Well, don't. I wouldn't put yourself down like that. I will tell you that I gave Daniel Wilson on the team and Emily Shad, I gave her the same thing, and I'm gonna give it to you. And I wish I had the sound effect right now where I could do the stamp. But you just got the bad bitch stamp of approval by working class bow hunter.
Oh, dang.
Well, you tuned your own bow. You packed your own bowl out.
Learned a bugle.
We didn't even talk about the insane shot you made on your buck with the rifle. How far was that buck?
I mean, I honestly don't want to talk about that because...
Well, I was just trying to make a point that you seem very confident and very competent.
Calculated.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've shot a lot of guns in my life, so I wouldn't take that shot in a lot of circumstances, but this was the exact right circumstance. Like, I wasn't nervous. There was snow just in case, like, you needed a track or blood or whatever. The buck was feeding. He was wounded to begin with. But yeah, it was a 400-yard shot, 430 to be exact. But I mean, and people out west shoot that far all the time, but it's not something that people around here think is like an ethical shot. But, you know, I knew the ballistics of my gun. I knew exactly where to aim. I picked up that gun and I said, you know what, like, I'm just going to see if it feels right. If I can't hold steady and it doesn't feel right, I'm not taking the shot. It actually took me 20 minutes of watching him to convince myself, like, to take that shot. And I held real steady and I'm like, this feels pretty good. I'm just going to squeeze as slowly as possible so I don't flinch, so that it's kind of like that surprise trigger. And it felt like the most perfect shot I'd ever made. And it was like, we walked up on him. I hit him in the heart at 430 yards and just dropped him in his tracks. Damn.
That's extremely impressive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Congrats on the season. Killer stories. You are an excellent podcaster.
Very good storyteller. Yep.
So I'm so nervous.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I'm only like 6 bushels deep, so I'm not so nervous anymore.
Well, thank you so much for doing the podcast, being a huge supporter of ours, and congratulations on a killer season.
For sure.
We'll give you this time to plug whatever you need to plug, shout outs, anything like that.
I mean, honestly, I want to shout out you guys. Thank you so much for giving me a shot, because I know that, you know, like, I'm nobody. I have no followers. This doesn't really do anything for you. But, like, it's why people continue to listen to you, especially women, because, like, you've always just, advocated for women like me who are out there getting it done, who aren't, like, you know, bending over, showing her ass in front of a trail camera. Like, we're actually out there getting it done. And,
classic.
And I mean, I appreciate it. That's why I've, you know, been a listener for a really long time, and I don't know. I love that you kind of take a chance on women like me, on Danielle and Emily, who are really, you know, just living it.
For sure. Well, yeah. I mean, we try to focus as much attention as possible on people we think are doing it for the right reasons. And yeah. that's really it. Sometimes we're off. Sometimes we're spot on.
You know? I think your actions this past season kind of speaks volumes about the type of hunter that you are. I think we made a pretty good call adding you to the team.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, where can people find you if they want to see the photos of some of the bucks you kill, the elk? I mean, do you want to put any of that out?
Yeah, sure. So Rachel Bushack, which is like Bush Beer, B-U-S-C-H, with an A-K at the end, on Facebook. On Instagram, I'm Bitty Boosh. So Bitty, like B-I-T-T-Y, because I'm small. And then Boosh, B-O-O-S-H, which, you know, just kind of short for like a nickname for Bushack. We get called Boosh. So
Boosh, there you go.
I mean, you don't have to go follow me on it, really. You know, I love and hate social media so much. What I love about social media is like I'm surrounded by a lot of people that don't hunt through my job, and I feel like I try to like show hunting in the best light possible. I mean, I've you know been in a lot of business meetings and stuff with people who are vegan or whatever, and just try to explain like what I do and why I do it. And I feel like you get a lot of respect actually more than you do hate if you talk about it in the right way. So you'll see just that's kind of how I tend to be on social media.
That's fair. Yeah. That's a good way to look at it too, because those people are always around, and that's why we advocate for clean photos and doing things the right way and just kind of explaining it. You know, if you have someone that's not a hunter, explain to them the business of it, like the ethics of it, the background of it, not just...
And sometimes those can be the best conversations, too.
Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think you are a great person to represent hunting, especially in the atmosphere that you're surrounded by every day with your day job. Congratulations. Thank you so much for the support, and I really, really enjoyed this podcast.
Yep. And welcome to the team
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome
Thank
to the team.
Thank you. Oh, you know what else I didn't say? I've been dying to say? Fuck their geese.
Hell yeah. We're on the same boat then, huh?
Eric's over here just cheesing.
Team Eric.
I killed a lot of turkeys when I was younger, but it just doesn't do it for me. Like doesn't but then like when I got into bow hunting, like I want to kill one with my bow, and I did that, and now I'm over it. Turkeys are stupid. Exactly. Fuck turkey. So I just wanted Eric to know I'm on team.
I think we need a T-shirt that says "fuck turkey."
little up front. Maybe we'll make easy a page now, on the website that just has like you at the top as like the fuck turkeys leader, and then like little square pictures of everybody that's on your cult.
We're gonna change Eric's mind this year. We're gonna get him on a big old bird at Turkey Palooza, and he's just gonna fall in love.
I got him on one.
He was excited for like 0.3
seconds. I didn't even get a turkey last year because I got him on one, and he's like, "I'm gonna fuck."
You can be the camera guy for Fuck Turkey Palooza.
That's fine.
Fuck Turkey Palooza.
Okay. I'll just be the bitch for everyone.
Perfect.
I'll be okay with that.
I love it.
I'll be the beer
That's
runner.
Great. I almost forgot to say it. I'm so glad I remembered that.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. You're awesome. Congrats on the season. Yep. And I'm going to close her out with a solid go shoot your bow. We love you.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.